Yaakov undergoes the most dramatic, tied 1A and 1B. Sefer Bereishis has a lot of drama to it. But you ask me, the two most dramatic moments of Jewish history, everything before Avraham is general history, the two most dramatic moments of Jewish history are the Akedah, the knife in the neck, and the ladder. And the ladder is so iconic, Sam, you're misleading him again. Oh, sorry. Put papers away, Daniel, those are not paid. The ladder is so misleading. No, ladder is so dramatic. You're misleading. Ladder is so dramatic that it becomes a cross-cultural icon. The Akedah is a very, very Jewish, the binding of Yitzchak. But Jacob's ladder, part of every culture. Grounded on the earth, scaling the heavens, rung by rung, ascent, transcendence. Like every culture has a ladder imagery somewhere. So in some ways, the resonance of Sulam Yaakov, as we call it, Hine Sulam Mutzav Arza, is even broader than the Akedah. If Hashem Nisavalav, Melechei Elokim Olim Yordimbo, just put yourself into Yaakov's shoes. You know the end of Sefer Bereishis. You know where this puppy lands. Yaakov does it. He's penniless. He's stalked by his murderous brother. He's been expelled from his home. And he doesn't even know whether his father acknowledges his whole subterfuge, because he never has that moment with Yitzchak that we see, you did the right thing, and I'm sorry for favoring Esav. What was I thinking? Silly of me. Thank you for saving me for myself. We don't get that in Toldos. And we don't even get in Toldos, Yitzchak, for whatever reason, we don't get Hashem coming and saying, you're the one. You're the one. You're the one. You made the right move. Thank you for holding me out and being faithful. That only happens in Vayetze. So if we take a snapshot, of Yaakov's psychology in the beginning of Vayetze, he's terrified, he's unsure, probably racked with guilt, at least uncertainty. And all of a sudden Hashem comes to him in a dream. He says, not only are you the one of the brachos and the legacy, but I'll protect you and I'll preserve you and you won't be murdered and you'll return. Great package. It's not just Hashem in a dry delivery of assurances and guarantees. This is imagery, angels, ladders. It's a very poetic, passionate moment. It's a moment of enchantment. That's why it's in a dream. So his son isn't giving him a set of A, B, and C's. This is an experience. When you have an experience, it's not just information. You have an experience. You have an experience. So what happens when he wakes up? What would I do? I would say hello. Birchas Hagomel. Sing my favorite song. Thank Hashem. Live in the moment. Sounds like he's starting down that route. But let's pick up. That's why I didn't give the first part of the session, because everyone reads that part. Let's read the wake up. The after the fire. After the dream. Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnasa. Vayomer Chayin Hashem Elokom Hazeh Menachin Lo Yadati. Manu Mekom Hazeh. Starts to process it. Chayin Hashem Elokom Hazeh Menachin Lo Yadati. So he takes a stone and he makes a shrine or a site. Okay, he's heading in the right direction. He's going to offer something. He pours some oil, which is their equivalent of korbanos. Renames the place. Okay, so far this is fully expected. Pasuk Chaf is where it starts to get a little bit unexpected, a little bit bizarre. Let me take a neder. Yaakov's caught up with Daf Yomi. He's learning Maseches Nedarim. Let's take a neder. V'yidei Yaakov neder le'mor. Let's see. Hashem, here's the way it's going to go. You stand by me, I'll stand by you. If you protect me, and here are the conditions for the protection. I need some food. I need some clothing. I need to make it back. Give me those three. Here are the percentages I'll give you. 10%. Does that make sense to you, Hashem? Is that enough for you? You want more? Too bad. I'm 10. I still need 90. 10 is my last offer. There's my expectations. Then you're getting back. I'm going to come back here. What a deflating moment. You just lived through the greatest, most iconic revelation of Hashem and all gracious, and you're calling in the lawyers? No disrespect, you're calling in the lawyers? The lawyers get called in these dreary moments, not got to work out disagreements and arbitration, but this is not a moment for arbitration and lawyers and percentages and what are your demands, what are my demands, 10%, more than 10%. Celebrate the moment. Absorb the passion and the inspiration. Sing Hallel to Hashem. Why are you deflating all this energy with what you're going to get, what he's going to get? What is Yaakov doing here? So you guys already have advanced. Someone ruined it, so you already know what this shir is titled. But let's go back a little bit. Because so often people ask, what do you think a yeshiva is? It's a metaphor for yeshiva. So I heard the following metaphor, which carries certain validity, but I find it very, very strident, very, very abrasive to me. A yeshiva is like a teva. Because the world outside is flooded. It's flooded with evil and flooded with temptation and flooded with confusion. Just find a pure, insulated, protected zone to grow. That part I agree with. What do I disagree with? Because what are the connotations of a teva that I find difficult? Well, first and foremost, because it creates a dichotomy and a polarity between those in the teva and those outside of the teva. Because if you're in, you're safe. If you're not in, then you're flooded and doomed. And that's hard for me to accept. Hard for me to accept that only people who make it into yeshiva are rescued for history, and everyone else is. A little bit like the world I grew up in. One of the reasons I had a very hard time with that world is because there was a term for people who weren't part of the coded way to live their lives. And in Yiddish, they're called oisvarfs. Oisvarfs is a Yiddish word for outcasts. And I picked up that at least Hashem made my Hashem. I can't talk about Hashem. I can't talk about other people. And Rav Amital turned my head around. We have a people. Not everyone's going to be as righteous as you like them to be. No one's going to learn Chas V'Shalom. Not everyone's going to learn in the Gush. They may learn in another yeshiva. You know what? They may not even learn in yeshiva at all. You know what? They may not even show a Torah mitzvahs. But they're Jews. And they're only part of Jewish destiny. And how do you create the vortex of a yeshiva while still encompassing and incorporating people around you? Hard. It's not easy. It's easy to say us versus them, in versus out, safe versus flooded. Just as easy to create a big tent and have a circus environment, a hippie convention, everyone can come. And how do you, on the one hand, straddle the fence? How do you thread the needle between forceful passion and energy and focused commonality, but radial incorporation, radial. Bring people in, incorporate things. So it sits at the core of my identity, core of this yeshiva. Same thing, some of you that I went through the process with in America, it's easier to say, oh, those programs take this type of boy and we want the stark boy. Well, I don't know what that means. I'm not trying to create a stark yeshiva. It's the last thing on my mind. If you give me a list of 10 things I want in yeshiva, I wouldn't think stark. I think, how do I create a yeshiva where boys can come from different places, not just geographical, different places, different futures, and gather around one common set of interests? And each take from that campfire what they can. But you need a campfire. If there are too many people around, there's not enough oxygen for the campfire. Sheet. So that's what I find a little bit strident about the table. But for the purposes of this year, the second part that I find difficult about the table imagery is not just the bifurcation between the table dwellers and the people dying in the flood. Lost in the flood. But what happens after the teva? The answer is a whole bunch of nothing. Because there's no carryover from the teva. You know, he walks out of the teva and doesn't seem to have been a changed man. Because the first thing he does is get drunk and humiliate himself. So I'm looking for an image that captures how I want yeshiva to affect your life after yeshiva. Because the last I checked, none of you have signed one for life. If you want to, come sit with me after Shira, because we're happy about that. But right now, that's not where everyone's heading. You're all here for whatever time you're in yeshiva, and then you're moving on. So how do you carry over? And it's not thinking about a teva, because a teva says, well, while we're there in yeshiva, we're safe and we're great. And what happens afterwards? How do you avoid the fallout after you leave yeshiva? So the metaphor that I prefer is not an ark or a teva, but as you guessed it, is a lighthouse. What is a lighthouse, and why is yeshiva like a lighthouse? Because this is what happens at a lighthouse in the weeks leading up to the journey. Because in those days, they spent weeks charting their journey, navigating their journey. They sat quietly around the table, all the sailors and the navigators with their compasses and their rulers and their rudimentary maps. And they mapped, at this point, we have to turn 3 clicks left. And at that point, we have to turn 3 clicks right. And at this point, we have to turn the rudder. And at that point, and this point, this will be a full moon. And the full moon will create certain tides. And when the storms, which are expected in the winter, they mapped out a very, very careful navigational map in a moment of clarity and tranquility. They sit in the lighthouse. There's a nice fire going. They're drinking some cognac. They're sleeping well in their beds. They're eating some nice game. Everything is quiet, still, and clear. And they map out their future. Now fast forward. 3 weeks later, they're at sea in the middle of a blinding storm as the ship is being tossed to and fro and people are being thrown overboard. And it's dark and sheets of rain are hitting them from different directions and the mast is falling over. And at that dark moment in the middle of the storm, no one on that ship has any clue whether moving the rudder 2 inches to the left or 2 inches to the right makes any difference, because you're lost at sea and you're swirling. And you know what you do? You stick to the plans. And you trust your former self more than you trust your current self. Because your current self doesn't have the clarity to make decisions. You trust the lighthouse over the moment. And that's not the way people live. And that's why you have to change a little bit the way you make decisions. Because the way we make decisions is we make decisions in the moment. We assess the options. We assess our values. Say, what should I choose? The problem is life fluctuates and life changes. And if every single decision you make will be re-examined and thought of under conditions of less clarity, you'll make poor decisions, because you'll make certain decisions under duress. I don't just mean psychological duress, cultural duress and personal duress, and you will make inappropriate or inaccurate decisions. And part of life and part of the courage in life is, can you trust your former self more than your current self? And that is an inversion of the way we normally experience life. We normally experience life in the moment. We don't look back to what we thought 10 minutes ago or 2 hours ago or 3 years ago. We look back at what we think right now. But the lighthouse effect is, sometimes you have to trust your past. And you have to have the discipline and the strength of character to implement those decisions, even though right now they don't make sense. Right now, in the heat of that gale, in the swirl of that gale storm, there is nothing sensical about 2 inches left, 2 inches right to the rudder. But you know that the you of 3 weeks earlier was much more capable of making that decision than the you right now. And if you don't trust that past self, you will drown at sea. Your ship will be cast on the rocks. And all the men will die. And the only way to save the entire ship is to trust your former self. And yeshiva is exactly a lighthouse. Because in yeshiva, you finally see things with a level of clarity that you never had before and you will never in your life have again. Because beforehand you were young and you faced the barrage of cultural pressure and you were living in your cultural setting, your home, your family, your society, whatever way they capped your worldview, and you think that that is distortive or distorting, wait till what life has in store for you. Just wait till you're juggling academics and marriage and social pressures and competition in college and foreign elements that challenge your religious identity. Just wait. Kiddie pool. Before yeshiva is the kiddie pool. You're going to be tossed at stormy seas. Now, here's the trick. Most of the decisions in life you go through in the moment. You can't just lock your life in, set everything as a plan, and follow it to a T. That's ridiculous. And you have to have adaptability, and you have to be able to pivot. And some people are so wooden-headed and obstinate, they never pivot, and they just bang their head constantly. You see people just constantly banging their head against the wall. And they can't adapt, and they can't change. And if you want to compliment this year, think about this year I gave you a long, 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 long time ago in Parshas Ki Teitzeh about Shiloh again being something you can't plan for. You have to change sometimes. Just feel, don't have the ability to change. Learn to change. Learn to be nimble. Learn to shift off the things. Learn. Not every day. I remember interviewing a boy a long, long, long time ago, and I asked him, what are your plans? And he told me his plans till the age of 85. So that's impressive. He sat there in the yeshiva. He was doing well today, but I was saying, 90% you can toss in the incinerator because it's not going to happen because you can't foresee. And that's not, before you talk about tragedies and mishaps and misfortunes, even normal life. But this is your moment of clarity. I think you all know that by now. You see the world in ways you couldn't have seen it before, and I promise you, you will not continue to see. You'll have those values deeply embedded, but things are going to start floating. Floating in front of your view and confusing you and pressuring you. You're not going to... Can yeshiva be a lighthouse for you? What does that mean? Are you capable... When you leave this yeshiva, this is not a message for this week, but it's a message for you to start thinking about this week so that you can plan at one point. Will you say, I am making a decision and I'm going to stick to that, even though in months or years it may not seem right to me anymore? Because I will trust the 18-year-old version of myself more than I will trust the 23-year-old version of myself stuck in army, college, whatever. Now, those could be major decisions, and I'll give you a few examples. Those could be minor decisions. But if you don't walk out of this yeshiva with a decision, it could all fall apart in months. Because inspiration comes and goes. This is Yaakov's lighthouse moment. Beforehand, he's terrified. And he's smart enough to know what awaits him. He knows who his father-in-law is, so he knows where he's traveling to. And forget Laban in his swindling, deceitful ways. He knows that he's going to be a shepherd, he's going to have responsibilities, and wives, and children, and pressures, and culture, and workmen, and accounting, and taxes, and... My goodness, I can't breathe. Right now on that mountain, everything seems clear to him. I'm going to get married and come back. What's unclear about that? Because he dreams about angels all day. Fast forward to the middle of Parshas Vayetzeh. Now we'll just look at the source. What happens in Bereishis Chavtes? What is this great visionary dreaming of? He's dreaming about sheep. Because all day he's dealing with sheep. He's dreaming about carpool. He's dreaming about work. He's dreaming about taxes. He's dreaming about sports. He's dreaming about whatever he's dreaming about. He's not dreaming about vision and idealism because he's a human being and he spends his whole day with the sheep. So what is he thinking about? No more angels, it's sheep. And he's smart enough to know that that's going to happen to him. So he's smart enough to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, inspiration, springspiration. I don't care about any of that. I am making this a lighthouse moment. I am coming back. If you protect me, I am coming back. And when I come back, it may not be easy for me to come back. It will be hard. I'll be married. I'll have kids, culture, father-in-law. I'll enjoy watching the Ram Narayim Bowl. I don't know. Coming back. I'm coming back to this place because I have to come back because I'm locking myself in. I'm making a nether. I'm locking myself in. The me is not going to want to come back, but the me of now is going to pull the me of then back because I'm making it. It's an agreement, and that's what happens because he's dreaming about the sheep, and somehow the malach comes, too tired to slap myself in the face, but slaps him in the face and says, stop dreaming about sheep. Anochi, look at Baruch Avdes, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Hanochi Ael Beis El. Remember Beis El? Remember that? Remember their obligation? That's your lighthouse. Hashem Ashachta Shem Matseva Asher Nadarta Sham Li Neder. You told me you locked it in, man. Don't tell me sheep and inspiration and angels. You made a neder. Kum Tzei Min Haaretz Hazos V'Shuv Al Eretz Molatcha. Stick to your guns. Stand by your decision. Don't give it up just because it's hard for you now. And then by the end of the parsha, as he's on his way back to Israel, he's dreaming about angels again. The parsha begins with angels, it ends with angels. Just in part to highlight, the middle doesn't have any angels in it. It has sheep. Because you get lost in the sheep. You get lost in the culture. That's what yeshiva is. Let me give you a few examples. I'll give you big examples, broad strokes, broad swings, big swings, and small swings. But you got to swing. If you don't take any of those, it's life. If you want to be successful and magnificent in life, you have to be courageous in life. To be courageous in life, you need to walk into the unknown. You can't make easy decisions. Stop making easy decisions. You'll have a quiet, comfortable life if you make easy decisions. You want to make great lives, you have to make the hard ones. And the hard ones are going somewhere you're not comfortable with, because you know there's something great that awaits you. And you'll always be redeemed if you trust yourself and you bet on yourself and you bet on the resources available to you. Two personal big swings in my life. Not about me, but I want to make it biographical so you can place yourself. If I had $1 bill for every boy that leaves this yeshiva after 1 year saying, I'm coming back, who doesn't come back, who didn't come back, not the people who are deceiving, not people just saying it just to make me feel they're more righteous. People who earnestly said, I'm coming back after college. I want to go back. I'm coming back. If I had a dollar bill for every boy who said I could retire tomorrow. Because life catches up with you. In a good way. The good parts of life catch up with you. Marriage, graduate work, professional, family, all the good things in life. Amir Tashem, you should have all of them. You're never going to be as free and unentangled, disentangled as you are now. So here I was, 1985. I had two spectacularly clear years of lucidity. I finally saw this is the way I see the world. I know I'm seeing the world in ways I'll never see it again. And then I left. There's a whole bunch of my friends who left with me from other yeshivas as well. Those days, there were very, very few shut up bets. So what happened was a few here, a few one in Karen Biyav, like three in Shalom. It was like, so we created like these groups of shut up bet boys together. We get together. So I had all my friends. I say, you're all coming back after college. Come back together. Fast forward a few years later, life caught up with them. This one was dating. This one was in a program. This one parents. Nothing wrong. No one was lying. Man, getting on that plane to come back 2 years after college. Talk about butterflies in my belly. Wow. I got the yips. It's terrifying. None of my friends were with me. One friend that came back with me. One friend did the army. That's all. Of the whole group. There is no way I wanted to get on that plane. The last thing I wanted to do, I remember that moment walking across the threshold. This is close to 40 years ago. I remember walking across the threshold on that plane. I said, but this is right. This is a decision I made 2 years ago. There's more on that mountain. I needed before I knew about Aliyah, Rebbe. I just still was in graduate school, still planning to go back to America. There's more that I have to trust the 1985 version of me, not the 1987 version. The 87 version of me is college and girls and pressure and just, I can't. It's hard. I know it's hard, but I just have to take a breath and jump because I know it's right and I know if something is right. I'm just going to follow that internal gut in my past self. I can't tell you when to trust your past, but I can tell you there are times in life you have to. Because if you always make decisions in the moment, you'll be lost at sea. So many people get lost at sea because the crosswinds, pressures, especially in our world, the pressures are so severe. So I stayed 2 years after college. Now it's 1989. I'm on my way back. At this point, I've made a decision. No matter what America holds for me, I want to live in Israel. Yeah, little did I know in 1989 what America would hold for me. Now it's 4 years later. America's holding a lot more from me than it did in 1989. This job and this opportunity. Let's just say that in 1993, when I got on the plane to make Aliyah, the sleepy old Alon Shvut, one of the metropolis Gush Etzion with three sushi bars and two hummus and 13 pizza stores and traffic. I don't understand. Make it because it's a sleepy old town without a bypass road. You travel through Beit Lechem. I'll tell you that some other time. And in America, I'm not going to toot anyone's horn, but just let's say I had a nice package, nice setup, anything any young rabbi would want, I had available. People came over to my parents in shul. It sounded like Nichum Avelim. Okay, don't worry, you have two other kids. Don't take it so hard. Okay, you lost him. Don't worry, he'll come back. I'm just telling you how it looked. I'm going to take my two little girls and my wife with no family here, no internet, no phone, Zippo. There's nothing about 1993 that wanted me to get on that plane. Believe me. with kids, and once you have kids, they're close to the grandparents are having a hard time, as they should. Nothing against my parents and my in-laws, as they should, they're both here now. My life works out. But I went back to 1989 and said, look, it made sense in 1989 before I got caught up in this whole, this title, and that opportunity, and this money, and that apartment. And I'm going back to 1989. And I'm going to make a decision based on the lighthouse of 1989, not the confused swirling seas of 1993. I can't tell you when to make those decisions. I can only tell you to start making those types of decisions. And they could be small strokes also. Walk out of this yeshiva and say, just by way of example, okay? Just by way of example. I now know that it makes a difference whether I talk in davening or I don't talk in davening. Because I see what davening is to people and I see. And for the rest of my life, I'm going to be someone that never says one single word out of context in a base kinesis. Obviously, people need my help. I'm just saying chit-chat. And then in 3 years where you don't really feel like it and your religious level has dipped and your friends are talking about the game last night, you say, you know what? It's not the me right now, but it was the me then, and at least I'm holding on to that. And I don't care. Or whatever your decision is, I'm going to keep halacha this way or say Tehillim every day or whatever. It could be big strokes or small strokes. But if you don't take any strokes, you end up dreaming about sheep all day. And you get lost in the flood. And there's no ark to take you back. Because the ark has now been disassembled in some mountain called Ararat. And how do you take yeshiva and extend it beyond the moments of inspiration? Moments of inspiration, wonderful. Moments of clarity, wonderful. It's not life, guys. Life becomes very, very muddy, very, very quickly. Very, very stormy, very, very quickly. So you're not too early in your year to start thinking about that. For some of you, it's something like a shana bet. Say, you know, I'm going to go home for the sun. It's going to be hard. I can't imagine. Everyone's telling me it's right. Everyone says it's the best thing since sliced bread. I know I'm frightened, but you know what? I'm doing it, putting the fright on the shelf, and just dealing with the fear. Because courage is never, ever, listen to what I'm about to say, is never, ever the denial of fear. That's a myth. Courage is the ability to operate under the influence of fear. Don't think you're going to get past fear. Learn to walk with fear. Because it will line the road to success. And you'll have to walk past it, not ignore it. Now you can find some pathway without fear. You'll always be afraid. I remember walking along the campus as a Shana Aleph guy, torn apart inside. Whether I should say Shana Bet. I finally said, Hashem, I remember where we're standing. Hashem, this is going to be my Akedas Yitzchak. I'm saying Shana Bet. And I'm bordering with Shana Mem right now. It was frightening for me, as it should be for you. A certain person is my lighthouse. Everyone around me says that I trust them. Or Aliyah, or whatever. Whatever idealistic moment, idealism will never stand up in the face of the fluctuating world of pressure. It has to be fueled by some moment of clarity that gets locked in and becomes inalienable. Otherwise, you will never be able to implement idealism. That's the nature. The world is just too pressing. The world is just too confusing. And idealism stem some clarity, we have to lock it in. That's what Yaakov's doing. He's locking it in. He's not just dancing and singing and reciting Hallel. He's saying, let's make a nether. And that's what retrieves him, because he's lost. And the Malach says, you have to come back. And Chazal is critical, because he comes back. Even when he gets there, it takes him a while to get back to Beit Yel. It's only after Dina that he gets back to Beit Yel. It's human nature. And Yaakov knows enough to know that it's human nature. And that's why he says what he says. Okay, don't leave this mountain without a decision. Without a decision, you're going to live your life by. Because or else, you're just relying on the inspiration of this mountain to carry over, and I can't guarantee how long that will last. When you've got ironclad decisions, and you have the guts to stick to those decisions, that's built to last. That's durable. It takes a level of emotional courage and a little bit of vision to be able to do it. I know it's scary. I know it's hard. I told you before, the greatest decisions of life are the hardest decisions we make. But those are the ones that are most redeeming because they bring us to a place we can't get to on our own through baby steps. You just take baby steps, you walk in place. If you want to get to that next place, you have to walk into a dark place that you can't understand. And there are points in this in your life that you will see that with greater illumination, with greater clarity, less clouds, more relaxed. You'll see, you'll feel, okay, this makes sense to me. I'm doing it. When I get back home, it's going to be hard to get back on the plane and come back to the Army. It's going to be hard to go to the Army. It's going to be hard in 10 years to make all this. It's going to be hard, whatever. Have the guts to make those types of decisions. You'll see. 25 years from now, I come back and thank you. Say, I made that decision. People have told me, I made the decision the way you asked me to. And have a look back. It's changed my life. And if I just had made the decision at the moment and at the sign on the dotted line, my hand would have been wavering and my knees would have been buckling. I would have yips and no way I would have made it. But I said, you know what? It made sense. I committed to it. Nothing will stop me. Not my current fear or current equivocation. Okay? Let us stop here a couple minutes early. Okay? And we'll take a little bit of a break. Ray Bernstein speaking at 6:50?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you another 10 minutes or so, but I don't want you more to absorb what I just said. Okay? Okay.